Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you live from the Blog Talk Radio studios in the heart of Hudson County. Folks, you know it's always in Union City. Insider NJ proudly brings to you Politically Direct. And I am the Professor Fernando Uribe. I want to welcome you all here tonight, the 21st of February, the year 2019. Of course, I hope you're all having a wonderful week, even after all the nuisance of snow and ice on our roads. Again, ladies and gentlemen, I thank you all for listening from wherever you're doing so here throughout the Garden State. And, of course, to all my friends throughout the good old U.S. of A. You can write to the show's inbox at any time, folks, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. If you have any suggestions for future guests or topics, write to me. I love getting email, and I make sure to get back to you promptly and expediently. Again, that's what I do here on the show. So write to me, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram @politicallydirectnj. You can also follow me on Instagram @your_favorite_Fernando. Of course, check me out on Twitter @ProfessorFUribe. Always great content each and every day. Brand new followers, brand new likes. Again, without you, my loyal listening audience, that really check out my social media on a daily basis. Again, the show would not be anywhere near the success that it is. And again, I owe it all to you tuning in tonight, not just only this week, but every single week here on Blog Talk Radio. Now, I do want to hear from you tonight. At some point, ladies and gentlemen, call me toll-free, 818-572-8032. Once again, toll-free number tonight to call in if you wish to opine. I'd love to hear from you, 818-572-8032. And our toll-free number is brought to you by Insider NJ. Now, don't forget to check out Insider NJ, ladies and gentlemen, by going to www.insidernj.com for the absolute best coverage of the political scene throughout the state of New Jersey. Nobody does it better, folks, than Insider NJ. Once you go on their website, you click at the very top, and once you see the subscribe button, click on that, and you'll be enrolled absolutely free of charge every single morning. In your inbox, you'll see the morning intelligence briefing, the latest columns, the best news anywhere concerning what's going on in Trenton, and, of course, throughout all the 21 counties here in the Garden State. No one does journalism any better than Insider NJ, so check it out there. Make sure you follow them on Twitter and also like them on Facebook. Again, folks, www.insidernj.com. Best coverage anywhere in the Garden State, folks. Don't forget to start your day with Insider NJ. Now, the opinions and views expressed tonight and every week here on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the management, the journalists, or the staff. Folks, again, I hope you had a wonderful week. I know we had a week off here on the show. Hopefully everybody had a wonderful Valentine's Day last Thursday. I know I did. A great Valentine's Day weekend, so certainly for all of you, you got to celebrate it. Hope you all enjoyed it, and a wonderful, wonderful weekend for sure. And so, you know, having the week off for Valentine's Day was nice, but back to work this week, folks. And really, I'm here for you tonight, my loyal listening audience, and talking about the issues and getting the exclusives that nobody else gets here in the city of New Jersey. And, of course, it's always courtesy of Politically Direct. So, again, folks, 818-572-8032, our toll-free number. Tonight, again, brought to you by Insider NJ. We'll gladly take some calls later on in the show. So if you do wish to call in, we'll see your number in the call queue. Again, please be patient. We'll take some calls later. We have a great guest coming up in just a few moments. I know a lot of you have just been blowing up my phone this week with text messages on Facebook Messenger, also on Instagram, just telling me how excited you are about tonight's guest. And I'm anticipating a very good program tonight, ladies and gentlemen. So, again, don't go anywhere. Keep it right where you are, right here on Blog Talk Radio and also at insidernj.com/podcasts. If you're tuning in there from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet, thank you for joining us here tonight here on the show. And, you know, it got me thinking today as I was sort of preparing my notes for the show, and I'm always trying to think of something sort of juicy and something stimulating and maybe something thought-provoking when it comes to my opening monologue. And to be honest with you, I think this week will be no different, because it got me thinking about why we should audit our education spending in New Jersey. And that is the subject of tonight's First Shot. Now, folks, again, a great article just published yesterday on the Insider NJ website, so definitely check it out. But Assemblywoman Betty Lou DeCroce, a Republican out of the 26th Legislative District, if you're not familiar, that's sort of parts of Upper Bergen County, a little bit out into Passaic County as well. But the Assemblywoman, again, asked Governor Phil Murphy this week to authorize an audit of education funding in New Jersey as a way to sort of root out waste and provide tax relief for homeowners and renters. First and foremost, bravo, Assemblywoman. I've been thinking the same thing for quite some time. Now, the Assemblywoman went on to say yesterday, quote, "I appreciate that the governor ordered an audit of the Economic Development Agency and an audit of New Jersey Transit. And those audits were helpful. But neither of them will help the state deal with its number one problem, which is property taxes." She also went on to say, quote, "The key to property tax relief is finding out where our education tax money is going and how much can be saved by eliminating waste and improving efficiency," said DeCroce, who twice last year asked the governor to commission an extensive school spending audit. Now, the Assemblywoman went on to say that taxpayers are funding about $28 billion, that's right, folks, billion with a B, on education in New Jersey, which makes school costs by far the biggest driver of property taxes, especially outside of urban areas. Now, state homeowners pay the highest property taxes in the country. I know I'm a homeowner. I know many of you are as well. And New Jersey spends the third highest amount of any state on education in the country. She also wanted to say in yesterday's press release, quote, "New Jersey's ridiculously high property taxes are not only a burden to working people, they are a disincentive for businesses to locate and expand here." The Assemblywoman, who is actually also a realtor, not just only a legislator. Now, property taxes drive up the cost of homeownership and are one of the main reasons people are fleeing New Jersey. Now, DeCroce said despite enormous sums spent on education by state residents, she hears from teachers and parents who say their classrooms often lack essentials such as pencils and paper. Quote, "It is a fiscal and moral imperative that the legislature and the governor find out where our education tax money is going and how we can use it more efficiently," said DeCroce. Quote, "The answer to better education cannot always be to spend more of the taxpayers' money." Well, first and foremost, bravo to the Assemblywoman on this, because I know that she speaks for a lot of us. She speaks for me. She speaks for a lot of homeowners and taxpayers here in New Jersey, taxes anywhere in the country. And again, just some stats there that New Jersey spends the third highest amount of any state on education on its students. And one of the things that really upsets me, folks, and I'm an educator, okay, I work in higher education, and I have a lot of friends that work as teachers in school districts all around New Jersey. So I'm very familiar with sort of the inner workings of our educational system, both, again, in higher education and certainly at the high school, at the middle school, and even at the elementary school level. So this is something that I'm not sort of just, you know, being speculatory about. I mean, I know what I'm talking about here. And one of the things that really upsets me, and I know that the Assemblywoman is on to something, is, yes, you know, I understand that the Economic Development Agency was important in terms of looking at what tax incentives we can revisit here in New Jersey. Also, a very important audit of New Jersey Transit. God knows that our trains and buses are not running at their best capacity, and the state can certainly do better. But I think that the Assemblywoman's argument about an audit of our educational system, I think, is just as vital, folks, because, again, we spend just an enormous amount on education. I mean, just look at this number, $28 billion a year on education in New Jersey. And this is driven, again, by property taxes. And outside of urban areas, folks, I mean, state homeowners, again, pay just an exorbitant amount. And one of the things that I'm adamant about with the Assemblywoman's plea here is, yes, I think we need to audit our educational system. I think we need to audit the Department of Education. I think there's a lot of waste. And I think we also – and listen, there was a very important word in there that she mentioned in her press release when she mentioned, you know, where our education tax money is going and how we can use it more efficiently. Well, speaking of the efficiency, one of the things that really upsets me about our educational system here, I think, is how we're hiring teachers and I think even administrators. Now, let me be very clear, because I don't want anyone to take me out of context tonight. I have a lot of friends that are teachers. I think that the starting pay for teachers in New Jersey, I think, is too low. I think the starting pay, if you want to attract good young professionals from various disciplines into teaching, I think you need to sort of make the starting pay a little bit better. And we need to do that in New Jersey right away. Having said that, what bothers me in terms of efficiency, folks, is yes, I can tell you from firsthand experience, I've talked to teachers that I know that have been in the business for many, many years. They're tenured, they know. And one of the things that really upsets me is not just sort of the waste that we see at the local municipal levels, you know, in our boards of education that we see in municipalities all across the state, but I think the way that we're hiring people as well, especially in upper tier positions. Folks, let me be very clear about something, and this might piss some people off tonight. And I don't really care because I know what I'm talking about here. But one of the reasons I think that a lot of our educational systems and a lot of our municipalities and school districts are not run as efficiently as possible is because we have the wrong people in administrative positions. Listen, understand something, folks, that, and let me be very clear, because I'm sure people listen tonight and say, oh, well, that's very hypocritical, Fernando, to talk about graduate degrees or higher education degrees when Fernando has multiple graduate degrees in disciplines that, quite frankly, maybe I don't feel are necessary, or I feel maybe don't the mustard, as they say. Well, folks, listen, I teach at the college level. So clearly having multiple graduate degrees, having master's degrees, having a PhD, I think are imperative to teach at college. But what we're seeing in school districts all across the state here is we're seeing people get hired with these felonious graduate degrees that border on administration and supervision. And this curriculum, folks, is an absolute joke. And the problem is that with the curriculum being a joke, you know, we're giving these degrees away to professionals, and those are, you know, going for administrative positions in our school districts. And guess what? They become inept. And they contribute to the lack of efficiency in our school districts. Listen, if you want school districts to run more efficiently and much more competently, hire CPAs. Now, again, that might be hard. You might want to make starting salaries competitive. Hire people with MBAs. Hire people with MPAs, you know, masters in public administration. Hire people with master's degrees in either political science, in history, or English. But these Mickey Mouse master's degrees that we see coming out of various schools in New Jersey that enable people to go for administrative positions in our school districts is a joke. And I think this is the problem when we talk about not just property taxes. We talk about we're hiring the wrong people in these administrative positions. I mean, the idea that a gym teacher, folks, can take this sort of curriculum at various different colleges in New Jersey, principal, or even, God forbid, a superintendent. I'm sorry. I much would rather trust someone with an actual reliable or legitimate graduate degree to be able to run a school district, to run a budget, to run a curriculum. And we're not seeing that. So aside from just property taxes skyrocketing in New Jersey and a lot of waste, we're also wasting time and money with hiring the wrong people in these school districts with these, again, these Mickey Mouse master's degrees that, quite frankly, if you look at the curriculum, folks, it's a joke. And the problem is that when you're hiring jokes, you're making the school district a joke. And we need to get away from that. So it's not just about auditing the Department of Education. It's auditing waste and making sure we operate our schools much more competently, but it's hiring better people, not people with felonious graduate degrees that, quite frankly, aren't contributing to anything in our school districts. And I think that's the best way we're going to clean up education in New Jersey. Again, I applaud the Assemblywoman out of the 26th Legislative District, but more has to be done. It's not just about how we're spending our money. It's who we're hiring and putting in important positions in our school districts. Until then, we're really never going to solve the problem here in New Jersey. And that's my first shot here on Politically Direct. Folks, 818-572, toll-free number tonight to call in. Again, the toll-free number brought to you by Insider NJ. Folks, it is 8:15 right now on the East Coast. It's my pleasure to welcome to the show for the very first time. He is the chairman of the New Jersey Republican Party, the Honorable Doug Steinhardt. Mr. Chairman, welcome to Politically Direct here on Insider NJ.
Fernando, good evening. How are you, sir? Thanks for having me.
I'm good, Mr. Chairman. Can I call you Doug? Is it just easier, Mr. Chairman, to do
please.
That?
Please, no. I'm very happy. Let's try to keep this in.
All right.
If you're okay with it, I'm okay with
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Great. And first of all, Doug, again, congratulations. I know when you were elected back in 2017 as chair. And there's a lot to talk about, Doug, because, you know, as I talked to some people off the air, and, you know, your appearance tonight has generated quite the buzz for the way we've looked at social media.
Sorry, say that again.
Just your appearance tonight, Doug, has generated a lot of buzz here on the show. And certainly I've had people reach out to me all day long saying, oh, my God, I can't believe you're going to have Doug on. That's great. We're happy and we're ecstatic that you're getting these exclusives. And Doug, I'm going to paint you a picture, and you tell me where I'm wrong here. I'm a guy.
Go ahead.
I'm a guy that predominantly is an independent. I'm a guy that tends to lean pretty much center right along the ideological spectrum. I think for the most part in my lifetime, I've voted Republican. I've voted for many Republican candidates in my lifetime. But I'm seeing this decline in the Republican Party here in New Jersey. I think for well over a generation, we've seen that the Democrats have occupied the legislature in both chambers for many years. I know after 8 years of Chris Christie now, we're seeing a complete 180 with Phil Murphy. And while I look at the NJGOP website, and I'm very excited to sort of talk about the upcoming leadership summit in Atlantic City, which we'll get to later in the show, I'm just concerned, though, Doug, for a lot of friends of mine here in New Jersey that are conservative and maybe are Republicans as well, they're losing hope here in the Garden State. And I wanted to get you on here tonight because I'm hoping that you can reach our audience tonight and tell conservatives or tell Republicans or even tell independents who tend to lean Republican why they shouldn't lose hope here in New Jersey. Why shouldn't they, Doug?
Sure. Well, look, the first thing I would say is this. Let's not anybody give up hope yet. I was born and raised in this state, and I don't intend to let anybody force me out. Once I leave, it's going to be on my own volition, not because my government forced me to have to leave. I came back to New Jersey after college and law school because, you know, I wanted for my children the same opportunities that I thought New Jersey afforded my parents and my grandparents before me. But like a lot of people in the state, you know, I think those opportunities are fleeting. New Jersey's become too expensive for most folks to live or raise a family, and they're leaving. And candidly, you know, I've got selfish motives. I've got two children, and I don't want to be one of those parents that is forced to visit his children or grandchildren on FaceTime or Skype. They can't afford to start a life here or find a job here or build a home here. And I think should be motivation for anybody to want to go out and try to do better. So, you know, look, we're going to Atlantic City. Let me back up. You know, I played college football, Fernando, and I remember walking in my first day of college football, and my college football coach says to me, I need 11 guys. Give me 11 guys I can walk down a dark alley with, and those are the 11 guys that will play football for me. He said, I'll take 22. I'll take 82, but I need 11. So, we're going down to Atlantic City to this summit March 1st and 2nd, looking for that core group of people who are tired of losing. I don't think political survival is a strategy. If we're not willing to fight for what we believe in, then we shouldn't be playing at all. I want to win. Atlantic City is about winning. We're digging ourselves out of the hole we're in, and we're going to start winning. This isn't the eighth grade. You don't get trophies for trying. If you don't win, you don't get to govern. So, you know, when I took over the state party, I kind of brought in a three-pronged platform of rebuilding, rebranding, and reengaging. And the last roughly year or so has been about those three things. You know, the 2018 election results were certainly humbling. I think we saw a national narrative play out back here in New Jersey, the likes of which we hadn't seen in a long, long time. But there were some bright spots. Republicans took control in Salem County. The Democrats couldn't shake Republican control in Atlantic County. And Republican plurality's actually won in 10 of the state's 21 counties. But the Republican Party isn't a top-down structure. In New Jersey, we're built from the grassroots. Every community is unique, and we won't take a one-size-fits-all approach to our message. With that being said, I think there's some core values that define what it means to be a Republican in New Jersey. And Fernando, I think this is kind of what you're getting at. It's where we kind of got lost, and we need to find our message. We believe the United States Constitution should be valued, honored, and preserved. We need to grow New Jersey's economy, not Trenton's economy, so that hardworking New Jerseyans see better wages and more opportunity. We need to admit that New Jersey has a spending problem, not a revenue problem, and then live within our means so our kids are left with opportunity and not debt. We need to start over, Fernando, with real pension and healthcare reforms to put public workers on par with private workers and patients and doctors in charge of their healthcare, not government bureaucrats. And these are some of the same points that I've been talking about over the course of the last couple of weeks as we've been making the round to Lincoln Day dinner after Lincoln Day dinner. We need to recognize that every child in this state deserves an equal opportunity at a great education. We need to accept that no school district should be elevated above another. New Jersey deserves a fair school funding formula. We also need to let charter schools flourish in our urban centers. Professor, you ran for the assembly up north in Hudson County, so you know the value of a good education. Republicans
sure,
won't cave
yeah.
to public sector labor unions. That's right. Republicans aren't going to cave to public sector labor unions to oppose these basic educational alternatives. I think we need to give our veterans the respect and gratitude they deserve. We all have friends and family who've served our country. No veteran should have to worry that after serving, they can't afford to call New Jersey their home. We know we need an immigration system that secures our borders, upholds the law, and boosts the economy. We know that the best anti-poverty program is still a strong family, stronger economy, and a good job. And finally, we know that we should value the traditions of family, life, religious freedom, and hard work. I think if history has proven anything, it's that fiscal messaging alone fails. We saw that play out center stage in 2017 when Phil Murphy promised to raise taxes by $1.7 billion and New Jersey elected him anyway. We used to own the moral high ground, Fernando, and we're going to take it back.
Well, listen, and folks, if you're just joining us right now here live on Blog Talk Radio, it's 8:22 on the East Coast here, and it's my pleasure to have the chairman of the New Jersey Republican Party, Mr. Doug Steinhardt, here tonight on Politically Direct. Doug, you said a mouthful there, and as an academic, I always like to dissect things as much as possible, and you made a lot of great points.
Sure.
But something that stood out for me, and this is something that it boils my blood when I talk to colleagues, especially in academia, as we both know that, especially in higher education, they lean very heavy left. So I almost feel like the lone remaining Jedi in the universe that is trying to sort of like stay afloat here in academia among my very liberal colleagues. But something that drove me crazy last fall during the midterms, and I think it happens during every election cycle, Doug, and this is the thing that kind of I'm surprised, and again, this is not a reflection on you. I think it's a reflection, I think, in general, for years with the Republican Party, Doug. And this is the thing.
Go ahead.
You know, when I hear Democrats in New Jersey talk about, well, you know, New Jerseyans are heavily taxed, and, you know, obviously the narrative now and since 2017 has been to sort of blame Washington for New Jersey's problems. And one of the things that just irritates me to no end is the idea that either people in New Jersey don't know any better or the people in New Jersey are just not willing to do some basic research. But the bottom line is that I find it funny whether it's Governor Murphy or we've seen a lot of legislators in Trenton, predominantly Democrats, that go on this narrative about, well, you know, the reason that New Jersey isn't doing well with, you know, in its economy, with job growth or taxes, is we have to blame Washington. And the fact is, it's not about blaming Washington.
No.
It's about blaming Trenton.
I respectfully disagree. You're right.
It boils my blood because I don't see – and again, this is not a reflection on you, Doug, but I think that for years it seems like you know, Republicans, whether they're, you know, legislators or advocates or anything else, don't seem to be punching back as hard and saying, wait a minute, this is absolute nonsense. We both know, we all know, that the reason New Jersey is in a fiscal rut, it's not because of who's in 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Listen, Doug, going back to President Obama or even President George W. Bush, New Jersey's had a spending problem in Trenton for decades, and it's not Republicans in the White House that are causing this. It's Democrats in Trenton. And I'm just surprised.
Well, I hope you didn't hear anything that I said. Me blaming Washington, because I don't think I did.
No,
look, not every problem has a difficult solution.
No, no,
right.
No, no, not at all. No, not at all. But my point is that I just find it irritating that more New Jerseyans don't catch on to this, because anybody would know that New Jersey's had a spending problem long before President Trump, long before President Obama,
agreed,
long before President George W. Bush, and the problem has been Trenton. And no offense, here's a newsflash for people listening. The party that's occupied the legislature for well over a generation have been Democrats. And I don't understand how New Jerseyans aren't waking up to that, Doug.
Well, that's what I said, you know, to you a second ago. Not every difficult problem has a difficult solution. You need to live within your means. How long would you survive, Fernando, in your house if you were living on borrowed money all the time? You know, you can't keep going back to a well, because the well eventually runs dry, and that's what's happening. You know, New Jersey's got the highest property taxes in the country, the second highest corporate tax in the country, and now the largest out-migration of businesses and residents in the nation. So, you know, the problem, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy every time we turn around and look back to Trenton. Trenton's hiding taxes and fees in nearly every piece of legislation that leaves that city. And I agree with you. And as I said earlier, I don't think you would have heard anything of what I told you a few minutes back that's blaming our problems on what's coming out of Washington, D.C. Our problems are much more local than that. Our problems are in the city of Trenton. And until we have a change of leadership, we're going to continue down the same rabbit hole.
You're absolutely right on that. And one of the things I think I wanted to really cover with you tonight, Doug, is the idea that, and listen, and folks, if you're just joining us here, coming up on March, between March 1st and 2nd, the NJGOP will be hosting their statewide leadership summit at the Harrah's Resort. That's a great casino, by the way. Actually, I love the blackjack tables there, Doug. So I might want to stop by and go check out the leadership summit. But I think when I read the details about what this summit's about, and I'm looking at some of the young stars in the party, you know, statewide, I mean, you know, this idea that I think the Democrats, either nationally or statewide, feel that, you know, they sort of cornered the market on either millennials or young professionals, let's say between the ages of, let's say, 21 to, let's say, 31, I think is a fallacy. I think we're seeing a lot of young blood in New Jersey that really is interested. And listen, very much like we see very different types of Democrats, we see different types of Republicans. And I think that that's on the upside, I think, for you guys. But I would just argue, though, Doug, that it just seems that statewide, and listen, I'm going to bring up the example, and we're going to talk about some different statewide issues in a second. But coming up this November, you know, all 80 seats are up for grabs in the Assembly. And we know that, obviously, Democrats still hold a pretty good majority in the Assembly. But, again, and I'm sure you know this, and I know I'm sure it'll be one of the big talking points coming up next month in Atlantic City, but it seems like it's ripe, and it seems as good a time as ever. If Republicans in New Jersey want to start making a dent, I think – this November, it's not make or break, but, man, it could be something that – it could be the genesis of something, right?
Absolutely, it can be. And, look, it's got to start – it's got to start locally. It's got to start with the grassroots. You know, we're focused on three main things, right? Candidate recruitment, data development, and media and messaging. And, you know, the summit is all about drilling down and getting people on the same page, kind of rowing their oars in the same direction. You know, Phil Murphy, Steve Sweeney, Craig Coughlin, they form the axis of this greedy, over-centralized, and urban-based oligarchy. They use emotional politics to perpetuate their power at the expense of the state's poor and underrepresented. But that power is built on lies. The Republican Party is the party of opportunity and affordability, and we can't let the Democrats take that away from us. So, you know, we're going to go down to Atlantic City in a week, and we're going to talk about how we get back on that winning strategy again.
Now, listen, and certainly I think that looking at what this leadership summit represents, I think it's a great opportunity for Republicans, I think, from all sides of the spectrum, when it comes to the way that, you know, again, our political climate is, and we'll talk about that a little bit later, but it's a very interesting political climate we live in, Doug. But something that really stands out for me, I think, and I've talked about this, I had Assemblyman Michael Carroll on my show late last year, and I've had different types of advocates here. I've had the chair of the state Young Republicans and also other Republican advocates and candidates on here. It just seems to me, though, Doug, that, you know, one of the things, and again, this is not sour grapes on my part, and it may come off like that to some people, but, you know, it's certainly not a reflection on you, and it's not even a reflection, I think, on your predecessor, but, you know, I think one of the biggest disadvantages going into 2017 during that gubernatorial election, which, number one, had an awful turnout, which kind of lends itself to, like, I think how turned off New Jerseyans were to both candidates. But I don't mind saying this on the record because I saw it with my own eyes. And, you know, short of the fact that, you know, the former governor, Chris Christie, you know, there isn't a lot I see eye to eye with him on. You know, I mean, listen, we're both devoted Cowboys fans. And on that regard, I can respect them and I can like them and all that. And you know, and I've met the governor and certainly, you know, I love the fact he's a Cowboy fan. But along policy lines, though, Doug, and it just seems that for the better part of his second term, I would argue he just did an immense disservice to Republicans in New Jersey. And I know that a lot of Republicans in the state are good soldiers and they would not throw him under the bus. But I think if we're being intellectually honest and fair, I think that there's a lot that Republicans can look back on and say, man, Governor Christie kind of did us in here. We lost seats in the legislature even while he was in office. And again, I don't want to just pin it on him, but it seems like the problems of the NJGOP have gone back a few years. And it's sort of like it's put a lot of you hardworking people, you yourself, this is just me arguing this, it puts all of you in a really big disadvantage because it just seems you've had to climb out of a tremendous hole that for the last 8 years Governor Christie put the party in. I mean, am I wrong in the way I'm looking at this?
Well, look, here's the way I look at it. You know, for 8 years, the Republican Party in New Jersey kind of walked in the governor's shadow because he was a big personality. When I took over in November of 2017, you know, we kind of turned a new page and we immediately went out and adopted this rebuilding, rebranding, reengaging platform because we didn't have anybody out front anymore. And, you know, so part of that process is, you know, kind of finding your identity again, because, as you know, as I alluded a minute ago, for a long time, we were kind of defined by one person. So, you know, now we're kind of going back to the drawing boards, reinventing the wheel. You know, we have an organization that we can be proud of. We have a message that we can be proud of. And I don't care whether you're from the northwest corner of the state where I live or whether from the southeast corner of the state where we're going to be on March 1st and 2nd. It really doesn't matter to me. You know, north, south, east, west. There are a lot of good, strong Republicans out there. There are a lot of moderate, you know, New Jerseyans out there that are just dissatisfied with this constant tax and spend mentality that comes out of Trenton, with this you know, choice to move away from the kind of values that have for such a long time defined, you know, our families and what's made the Garden State great. So, you know, from my perspective, again, we're sitting here trying to regroup and redefine and pitch as big a tent as we can and invite as many people under it as possible that share those common goals and that common desire to kind of get back to those core traditional family values that made New Jersey such a wonderful place for so long.
Now, speaking of values and issues, I think that they come center stage, and certainly with Governor Murphy taking office in January of 2018, you know, and one of the things that I tell my colleagues all the time is, you know, when people get mad or are upset reading their social media feeds or reading the news online, and they're upset about the economic direction of the state under Governor Murphy's leadership, I tell people all the time, I'm like, listen, he didn't lie to you. It's not like he ran on one thing and then he's doing another. Everything he ran on, he's attempting to do. So in fairness to the governor, I mean, he's not misleading people. I mean, he's doing exactly what he ran on. And again, he got elected on that. Fine. You know, elections are elections. But what's interesting to me, though, Doug, I think is moving forward, we're seeing issues now that statewide not necessarily have been problematic for Republicans, but now I think we're starting to see people sort of draw a line in the sand. And I'll give you a couple of examples. Aside from you know, it took almost a full calendar year for something like the minimum wage to be addressed. And I have my fundamental disagreements with raising the minimum wage as high as they wanted to, because, again, I think it can hinder innovation. I think it can really hinder workers in the end. So, again, I'm all for raising the minimum wage to a reasonable amount where it can help working class families, and you know, working class men and women, you know, adolescents too. But it has to be within reason. And it just seems like, and you mentioned it before, this sort of emotional capital that Democrats, and I think, listen, I hate to sort of put all Democrats in one bucket, because let's be honest. I mean, when we look at Democrats in New Jersey, I think, you know, we look at Steve Sweeney and Craig Coughlin very differently than we look at Phil Murphy. Yes, there's a D next to their name, but I think that, you know, along some policy lines, I think we're seeing some conflict within that party. I would make the argument, though, too, Doug, that even within the Republican Party, we're seeing even some divide as well. And that's along, not so much along the minimum wage, but, for example, you know, the entire idea of legalizing marijuana. I know I had, again, I mentioned Assemblyman Carroll. I had him on last year. And, you know, Michael's very much a libertarian, so I think, you know, he didn't really have as much of an issue. But I think there are still some conservative Republicans that are expressing, you know, some reservations about whether it's decriminalization, which I think is important. You know, again, having worked in the criminal justice system for 10 years before getting into academia, I can talk firsthand about sort of seeing the inequities in our CJ system. But this it seems like this incessant fixation about, well, we need to legalize marijuana. It's going to raise revenues, and the bottom line is that there's no telltale science that's going to tell us exactly how beneficial this is, Doug. And the problem is, once you legalize this, you can't put the genie back in the bottle. And I think that that's probably causing some divide among Republicans and even Democrats too, right?
Well, and you see that unfolding right now. I mean, I think you saw that the three Democratic leaders announced some tentative agreement on marijuana legislation, but they're short votes in both houses of the legislature, and they're short votes on both sides. They're short votes, on the Republican side. They're short votes on the Democratic side, and it's due and owing in large part to the fact that there is a lot of uncertainty and there is a lot of debate over what exactly is the right thing to do. Recent polling shows in New Jersey that people overwhelmingly are in favor of it, but you're kind of getting into uncharted territory. It's been illegal for a long time, and people are kind of unsure how to wrap their hands around it. You know, finances alone, simply doing something because it generates a financial windfall, certainly seems to be the wrong motivation for me. To the extent that it has other residual impacts, we need to be a bit more diligent and a bit more deferential to some of the science and the research before we just jump blindly into something new. But, you know, at the end of the day, from a GRP legislative perspective, I think a lot of them feel that they need to do what's best in their individual districts to do what they perceive to be best for the state. But at this point in time, as you pointed out earlier, I just think right now they're not quite sure where everybody stands on the legalization side. You mentioned when you first started, though, kind of talking about the $15 an hour minimum wage. And, you know, the fallacy, I think, with the $15 an hour minimum wage, and I did a little FaceTime post on this very issue with a woman who owns a couple small businesses back in my home county. But, you know, the Democrats want people to believe that a minimum wage is a livable wage. In reality, it simply isn't. That's not the way the economy works. And I can't tell you how many people I've talked to, small business owners, that worry that, you know, this policy is short-sighted, that it is, that it's going to cost people jobs, it's going to cost people their livelihood, and it's not going to achieve the results that the Democrats have promised that it will. And it gets back to what we talked about before, which is just, you know, the politics of emotion. And, you know, that's kind of been the Democrats' rallying cry for a very long time. You know, they prey on people's fears and insecurities, the fears and insecurities associated with the $15 an hour minimum wage issue. And it's unfortunate because it forces us as Republicans to kind of respond with logic. But at the end of the day, you can't hide the fact that the Democratic policies are failing. And you talked earlier about the things that were going on in Trenton, you know, and I think the problem that I see from Phil Murphy's perspective is problem. And one of the things that I hear as I kind of crisscross the state as often as I have, you know, our little state party team walks up 24,000 miles around the state of New Jersey last year, stopping in at Republican clubs and committee and candidate events. talking to other special interest groups, talking to minority groups around the state, is that the Democrats have historically overpromised and underdelivered. And what you have in Murphy's case, I think he made lofty campaign promises, and there have been marginal victories to show from those. And people are becoming increasingly dissatisfied with what's coming out of Trenton. His disapproval rating, I think it was spiked by over 10% in just the last Monmouth poll. So, you know, this failure in Trenton for them to come together and get anything done is going to have residual impacts, and I'm looking to capitalize on those in November.
Listen, Doug, speaking of approval ratings, I was saying this to a colleague the other day. I was surprised when I looked at the Monmouth poll and I saw 43%. I said, wait a minute. And again, I'm not trying to be disrespectful to the governor or sound like a smartass on the radio tonight, but who did they poll? Family members? Cabinet members? Illegals? I mean, who – again, I was flabbergasted. I looked at that number at the Monmouth poll. I said, wait a minute, how is that number as high as it is with, you know, seeing that property taxes are so high? And again, and I don't know how much you heard of my opening monologue, but cheers to Assemblywoman DeCroce out of the 26th district, you know, to sort of urge the governor
sure.
to audit, you know, education spending in Jersey. So, you know, kudos to her. For standing up and really, really making that a point. But it just – it was astounding to me that with, you know, the amount of spending that's going on in Trenton, with the idea that, you know – and I said this the other day where – and we'll sort of, you know, we'll get to the national scene in a minute. But, you know, the idea that, for example, you know, Attorney General Grewal is using taxpayer dollars to sue the federal government – based on
yep.
the governor and the attorney general's disagreement over the president's policies on border security, it was interesting to me because I said the first thing, and I posted this on the podcast page on Facebook, I said, wait a minute, is it just that the attorney general and the governor are they just more interested in bending over backwards for illegals, for example, than for taxpayers? Because it's our money. And it just seems that, to me, you know, we're seeing this methodology by the governor. And listen, again, he campaigned on a very progressive agenda. And as I told people, hey, I don't understand why you're mad or I don't understand why you're flustered. You know exactly what he was going to do. He's not lying to you. It's not like he went into office and just did a 180, as I said. I mean, he's doing exactly everything to the T that he promised. Now,
right.
as you said, I think that, you know, he's overpromised, I think, and also we're seeing that he's under delivering, and there are factors behind that. But the bottom line is,
of course, there are.
It's just infuriating, Doug, because to me, I look at it as this is a prime opportunity for Republicans statewide to punch back. And to your point about emotion, listen, Democrats both statewide and nationally have cornered the market on identity politics, and it's something that's just nauseating already. And it's nauseating. And it's something that, you know, again, listen, I'm Hispanic, I'm a minority, I get it, people will remind me about that all the time. But the fact of the matter is that this fixation on identity politics, it's really infested New Jersey, Doug. And quite frankly, I think it's really going to contribute to the decline of New Jersey, our home state. And I'm really concerned about it, man.
Well, let's back up real quick, if you don't mind, Fernando, for a minute to the polling, because, you know, you talked a little bit about the 42% number, and I got that. But, you know, some
That's
of the
great.
Other things that were particularly interesting to me, you know, the Republican split, the number of Republicans that were the first Monmouth poll from a year ago had that actually a number of Republicans that actually thought the governor was doing a decent job or willing to give him a chance. You know, that number grew exponentially, and, you know, the number of Republicans, I think, that were unhappy now are up in the 80%. The number happy were down in the teens. You know, the Democratic split closed. The approval-disapproval split actually closed. And the unaffiliateds, which was interesting to me, now the governor's upside down with unaffiliateds in New Jersey. So I think that it shows that things are changing and people are starting to wake up. The ones that the issues or the numbers that were a little bit more disconcerting to me, though, were how many people were unaware of things that were going on in Trenton, how many people were unaware of the Katie Brennan hearings, how many people were unaware of the infighting between the Senate president and the governor. You know, unfortunately, so many people these days, first of all, you know, the media, the traditional print media just doesn't provide the coverage that it used to. I don't know that they have the resources that they used to have anymore, but more and more millennials, more and more people get their news from places like you, Fernando. They get them on podcasts. They watch them on YouTube. You know, they turn to social media to find out what's going around in the state. So you don't get that same level of coverage that you used to. So, you know, we can't rely on the traditional sources of print media anymore to disseminate our messages for us. You know, we can turn to places where we can craft our own narrative and develop our own message and be our best messenger so that we don't lose that emotional war like we've been a victim to for so long. Because, you know, we're just never going to compete in the traditional media outlets that have never looked quite so favorably on our message. So, you know, that affords us an opportunity. From my perspective, just in the last year that we've been involved in State Party, you know, we reached over 3 million people last year through our social media contacts, you know, near daily kind of aggressive messaging, trying to alert people to what's going on in Trenton. You know, we made like 1.5 million voter contacts. We helped candidates send out over 100 pieces of mail. We did our first TV ad buy as a State Party in over a decade. So, you know, I'm proud of some of the little things that we did. When we took over State Party, we had 78 active donors in June of 2017. And when we closed out the calendar year in December 2018, we had over 1,600 active donors. So, you know, our small dollar donors, it increased 240%. So, you know, people are starting to pay attention. We're trying to reach out. We're spending time reconnecting with folks and working those grassroots channels that I think help grow a party, help build a party, and help, you know, disseminate a message that I think is a bit more effective and a bit more useful.
Now, when it comes to a message, certainly one of the things, Doug, that the upcoming Citywide Leadership Summit, again, for many Republicans that talk to me statewide, have said that this is something that's really going to, I think, be extremely instrumental in, I think, galvanizing Republicans from all across the sphere. Along the ideological spectrum. And I think that that's going to be crucial, not just, I think, in what we're talking about coming up this November for all 80 assembly seats, but I think moving forward, though, right? Because it seems that, you know, we're looking at, speaking of approval ratings, it's sort of astonishing that, yes, there are certain counties that the president scored high coming up in 2016 with voter turnout, but it seems that statewide the president is still not doing well in approval ratings across all 21 counties. I mean, it's predominantly been a very blue state. That's not a surprise. But, you know, have you spoken to the president? Have you spoken to his office? You know, are there any plans as the state chair to perhaps welcome the president here for any fundraising or any events? Because maybe that helps galvanize even more Republicans, or maybe Republicans that are on the fence that don't want to get involved yet. Have there been any discussions about that at all?
So, look, we're very fortunate to have some real deep New Jersey roots in the president's administration and in his reelection campaign. You know, he's out there making his case for reelection in 2020, and it's literally right around the corner. You know, in a state like ours, our focus is on the 2020 congressional races, winning back those seats that we lost in order to kind of prop up the president and his reelection efforts. You know, CD2 went for Trump and Dugan. Chris Brown won down there. It's a legislative district pickup seat for us. You know, we're focused on taking back CD7, CD11, you know, working against Josh Heimer and CD5, Tom MacArthur's seat, and defending Chris Smith. So, look, I was down in Washington last week. I'm not going to suggest to you that I was down there visiting with the president. You know, I don't pick up the phone and he necessarily answers. But by the same token, as I said earlier, there are some good political operatives from New Jersey filling the president's reelection committee right now. And it gives New Jersey a good foothold in what's going on nationally. So there's a lot for us to be happy about. There's a lot for us to be anxious and anticipatory about. And, you know, it's going to be an interesting 2019 and an even more interesting 2020.
Well, you know what, Doug, and certainly last fall during the midterms, a very demoralizing sort of experience on election night in terms of Republicans that, you know, there were counties, for example, you know, the Mikey Sherrill and Jay Weber race. I thought that was sort of a very unique indicator of perhaps seeing, you know, a shift a little bit in sort of the ideological climate within those counties. But, you know, as you said, I thought that, listen, and I said this to colleagues of mine and people who are conservative, and they were very, very hysterical about what happened. I said, listen, you know, short of two presidents, okay, short of Franklin Roosevelt and George W. Bush, okay, it's very hard for a president in his first term
to not lose house seats because it happens, and that's just a cycle. And I second, you know, I'm a student of history. I read a lot, as I know you do as well. And the reality is that that was sort of inevitable. But if you were a Republican in nationwide, you looked at the fact that they picked up seats in the Senate, which are very important because of Senate confirmation power and certainly in point committees and everything else. You know, so if you were a Republican in New Jersey, yes, there was some hope there, and you looked at it. But the idea that Republicans didn't do well in House races last year, okay, you know what, it's disappointing. But I think history told us that that was going to probably be inevitable. Now, as you just said, next year, when those very same House seats are up for grabs again, I think this is where Republicans have to sort of make the case, whether it's with Andy Kim down in South Jersey, or whether or not Mikey Sherrill is doing a certain enough job up in her district. But the bottom line is, I think this is, as you said, this is where Republicans have to galvanize and sort of lay out the case as, okay, you ran on this platform, maybe not as progressive a platform as some of your colleagues who are radicals in Congress, but you ran on, you know, on a different platform. You won, but the key is now you have to sort of put them, you know, take them to task though, right? Because now it's like next year you have to sort of put candidates out there that are going to really challenge them and say, what have you been doing in Washington other than subpoenas or, you know, just grandstanding, which, let's be honest, a lot of new congressmen and congresswomen are doing.
Yeah, that's an interesting revelation a lot of people have. I think Governor Murphy's going through it right now. You know, once you get to office, you can't just sit there and pontificate. You actually have to perform. And, you know, you're seeing this unfold for a lot of these people that were elected in the 2018 cycle. Now that they're there, they actually have to stand up and be counted for what they stand for, what they believe in, and how they're going to vote, and how those votes are going to equate to the people in their respective districts, the districts that they came from. So, you know, look, I think 2020 poses a much different landscape in New Jersey than 2018 did. And, you know, we're not getting ahead of ourselves. You know, we have 2019 in front of us, but 2020 is right around the corner. And as I said earlier, you know, we're focused on trying to retake some of these seats that we lost in the 2018 cycle.
Now, Doug, look, moving forward into, again, the rest of this year and looking into 2020, and even 2021, you know, looking to see who is going to be a formidable opponent for Governor Murphy during the next gubernatorial election. But, you know, again, as chair, and I'm sure you get inundated with this all the time, but moving forward, whether it's on issues that involve marijuana legalization or decriminalization, the ideas of the minimum wage, whether we're talking about infrastructure or other issues, what do Republicans need to do better in New Jersey? I mean, other than just sort of calling out Democrats when it comes to them, you know, utilizing politics way too often or being sanctimonious about issues when they don't have a leg to stand on, let's say, what do Republicans need to do better moving forward here in the Garden State?
Well, it goes back to the three things I gave us before. Like, our platform moving forward, as I said, is do a better job of recruiting candidates, do a better job of data development, do a better job in our media and messaging campaigns, and make sure that we're reaching voters. But, you know, my perspective on going forward is we can't be afraid of who we are. You can't be afraid to speak up for what you believe in. As I said before, you know, that message of opportunity and affordability, I think it resonates with people. And we can't be afraid of our platform. We can't be afraid of the left. We can't be afraid to be criticized for who we are or what we say. So, you know, what we're doing, what I'm going to be spending time doing over the course of this, the rest of 2019, is continuing the process that we started in 2018. From the southern end of the state to the northern end of the state, and letting them know that we're all in this battle together, and that the problem in Trenton is that they've really become tone deaf. They're so beholden now to the state's special interests that they can't address some of the state's most systemic problems: pensions, healthcare, school funding, government excess. You know, so that they resort to creating and raising taxes that cripple the state's economy and smother our families. So, you know, look, we're going to take the fight to them. As I said earlier, I'm not one to sit back and be reactive. We need to be proactive. And our platform going into 2019, 2020, and 2021 is to be exactly that, is to be a proactive voice and to give people a reason, an alternative to single-party rule in Trenton.
Doug, have you seen any divide along the lines of
Republicans that you've worked with or have met at town halls or even at the Lincoln dinners, for example, have you seen mm-hmm. any sort of steep ideological divide that exists between, and listen, and I'm sure I'm going to piss off our listeners tonight because, you know, where North Jersey ends and Central Jersey starts and South Jersey begins, I mean, we can debate that forever. But have you seen a sort of steep ideological divide that maybe exists between, you know, Republicans that you've talked to in North Jersey and South Jersey? Is there a stark contrast when it comes to that?
No, I don't draw a dividing line, you know, a magical dividing line between North Jersey and South Jersey, although I recognize that, you know, from a lot of people's perspectives, they're drastically different places. But, you know, my perspective is that, you know, if you're a Republican, you're a Republican, whatever your views are, you know, you're welcome under our tent. But, you know, I will say this, what I have seen going from places to places are levels of commitment to particular issues. And some people become, you know, very one issue oriented. And if you're not on board with them on that singular issue, whatever that issue happens to be, then, you know, we're very quick as a party to turn our back and not come out at all. And the problem you have in a state where you have nearly a 1 million voter disadvantage, you know, nearly 1 million more Democrats in New Jersey than there are Republicans. We can't afford to leave any vote home. And I will say this, and I said this multiple times in the past, when it came down to a race, for instance, like a Bob Hugin and a Bob Menendez is never going to vote. He's never going to share the values, Fernando, that you and I share, or that a vast majority of the other Republicans in New Jersey share, and for that matter, quite a few of the moderates that they share. But Bob Hugin would have. He would have. He would have supported the president of Washington. He would have supported Supreme Court justices that share similar views as ours. You know, but unfortunately, what I do find, and I find it semi-frustrating, is that we have a lot of one-issue Republicans, and it's that battle to try to convince them that, you know, 80% of the pie or 90% of the pie is better than 100% of the is better than none of the pie when we're dealing with our Democratic counterparts. Because I can tell you that while we're sitting here trying to figure out how we defend seats in this district or defend seats in that district, there are Democrats sitting around New Jersey right now trying to figure out how there aren't any Republicans left. And we need to kind of band together and start rowing our oars in the right direction if we're ever going to start winning again. And look, you know, my goal is to go out and try to energize as many Republicans as I can into doing exactly that. And I think we're headed in the right direction. You know, I am enthusiastic about where we left off from our summit last year. I'm feeling better and better about what I see unfolding for the summit this year. But we're going to go into it open-minded. We're going to go into it trying to build on the energy and momentum that we had over the course of the last year in terms of just reconnecting with Republicans around the state and try to get everybody on that page moving forward and demonstrating again that there is an alternative to Democratic rule in Trenton. And Democratic rule in Trenton has taken us in the wrong direction.
Well, it certainly has. And I think it's hard to dispute that based on the numbers we've just talked about before. Highest property taxes in the country, very much to Assemblywoman DeCroce's point that we spend the third most of any state in the country when it comes to educating our children, and we're not getting sort of our bang for the buck for it. So that's disappointing. But I want to get your thoughts on this today, Doug. I'm sure maybe you saw it in the headlines. Today, I believe it passed in the Assembly. I believe it has to go to the State Senate now about trying to keep the president off the ballot next year due to the fact that there'll be a requirement to have him or any candidate produce their tax returns. This is just petty. I look at this as just petty, and it just seems like grandstanding when there are just so many more important issues to worry about in New Jersey. I just think that was petty today on the floor of the legislature. Your thoughts on this, if you may, please.
Yeah, you call it petty. Candidly, I call it insidious. I mean, it's unconstitutional. It's illegal. Assemblywoman Schapese disclosed a letter that she got earlier in the year from the Office of Legislative Services advising the legislature that, in their opinion, and this is a neutral counsel for the legislature, advising the legislature that they thought that the proposal would be unconstitutional. So now we're going to waste state resources fighting it. But, you know, what I thought was so hypocritical about it is that earlier in the day, you had Senator Weinberg issue a statement. And there was a little bit more long and drawn out than the little quote that I grabbed. But she said that voters deserve to know that every candidate on the ballot is without compromise. And the hypocrisy of that statement is obviously that means unless, of course, everyone includes the Democratic governor or the Democratic
I'm sorry, I was losing you for a second there.
Yeah, where did I leave off? I don't know what you caught and what you didn't catch. You mentioned
Senator Weinberg. I made a statement.
The hypocrisy.
You know, referring to it.
She said voters. It was a longer statement than this, Fernando, but she said voters deserve to know that every candidate on the ballot is without compromise. And clearly it's not intended to apply to every candidate because it doesn't apply to the Democratic governor. It doesn't apply to the members of the legislature. It doesn't apply to Congress members. It doesn't apply to the U.S. Senate. Cory Booker's not going to have to turn around and disclose his tax returns the few times that he spends in New Jersey between now and his presidential run. The only person that this is going to apply to is the presidential race. It is hypocritical. It's far more than simply petty, in my opinion. It's insidious, and it's contrary to what our country was founded on, which was giving people the ability to run for office. You may not like them. You may not like what they stand for, but you don't combat it by changing the rules on how you play the game. You combat it by going to the ballot box in November every year and voting for the candidate you want. Maybe we win, maybe we lose, but you don't do it by simply changing the rules. I think a lot of people saw that when they tried to change the redistricting rules, and people reared in response to it. This is much the same way. Not only are we going to waste resources defending a lawsuit that we can't possibly win, I just think it sends a bad and a dangerous message to people everywhere.
You know, and it's interesting you bring that up because I know that the NJGOP website started a tracker on Senator Booker. And, you know, I thought that was brilliant because all we heard – and then listen, again, I have some fundamental ideological disagreements with Governor Christie, and I think that certainly the liberal media in New Jersey and even nationwide really took him to task in terms of how much time he spent campaigning for president. I found the tracker by you guys to be – I thought it was hysterical because I thought it really illustrates sort of like the hypocrisy that we see with the New Jersey media as to like holding Senator Booker accountable. Listen, I get it. He's not going to be in New Jersey a lot anyway because, he's a U.S. senator. He's going to be in Washington. But the problem is you're not going to be in Washington. You're going to be out campaigning, you know. So sort of like the same parameters that people held Christie to or scrutinized him over – it seems like, you know, Senator Booker is not going to get the same grief, and I think that's fundamentally unfair, but it seems like it's politics as usual in New Jersey, right, Doug?
Well, and look, and that was our complaint about it from day one, is that double standard that kind of comes out of Trenton. But, you know, I would say this, if you're unhappy about it, you know, fight back. Look, God bless my grandfather. I love the man. He passed away. More than 10 years ago now, but he was a man of few words. I think mostly because my grandmother never let him get one in. But, you know, he was a guy that valued that hard work. And he kind of lived by this mantra, which was, you know, no complaints, just solutions. And it was a lesson that I learned from him twice. You know, the first time I ran for mayor in my hometown, largely because I was opposed to this housing development, this high-density housing development. I was sitting on my grandfather's porch one day, and I was talking to him about it. And he's like, don't complain to me, you know, go fix it. So I was like, okay. I threw my hat in the ring. I run for mayor. I end up winning. I lost the political battle. That housing development got built anyway, but it was a great experience for me. But the other one that was more interesting to me, so I'm in college, Fernando, and I was my grandfather used to assign officials for all the sports up here, football, basketball, you name it. So as a college kid, to make some money when I was home on my breaks, I used to referee basketball games. So I called my grandfather one time over right before Christmas break because we had some snowstorms on the Gettysburg. I couldn't get home in time, and I couldn't make a basketball game that he assigned for me. So I call him. He answers the phone. I say, Grandpa, it's Doug. I'm not going to make it home Saturday. I got to stay back for an exam. And I hear Grandpa, Grandpa, I'm not going to make it home. I hear him say, okay. Click, and he hangs up the phone. So now I'm dialing back. So I want to explain to him why I wasn't going to make it home, right? And I finally get him 5 minutes later, and he says, Doug, listen, I don't care why you can't come home. It doesn't matter to me. The only thing that matters to me is I got to go out and find another official. And, you know, I think the point of that whole thing is, you know, rather than him complaining about the fact that he had something to do, he just turned around and went out to do it. And what I see happen a lot of times in New Jersey, unfortunately, is that people just sit around complaining. Our taxes are too high. You know, we're losing our ability to govern ourselves. And, you know, what we need to start doing is talking about how we fix it. We need to get out and back into working toward winning again. And it kind of comes, brings us all back full circle to where I started. And, you know, that's the discussion we're going to have at the summit in 2 weeks, which is, you know, just political survival isn't a strategy. We got to win. And, you know, I'm looking for a group of Republicans. We're looking to rally a party that's tired of the status quo in Trenton. They're tired of the status quo in New Jersey, and that they love their state and don't want to leave. So they're willing to go back and fight for the things that they believe in. And in this case, it's fighting to take over the government that we seem to have all but lost control over.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up because, again, folks, if you're just joining us right now, it's 9:05 here on Blog Talk Radio here on the East Coast, and he's been a gentleman being on with me as long as he has, just a couple more minutes of his time tonight. The chairman of the New Jersey Republican Party, the Honorable Doug Steinhardt, joins us here on Politically Direct. Doug, just a couple other things I just want to pick your brain about. Certainly as state chair, you know, you remain very active. You've been very visible. Certainly you're trying to galvanize the party. And I think a lot of Republicans that have reached out to me have told me off the air that they're very grateful for you in the sense of the effort you're putting forth and certainly the tenacity that you're really taking with your position. And, you know, going into next year, though, and I want to get your thoughts on this because we've seen the political calendar already starting. I'm sure at some point next year, during the presidential election, obviously as a state chair, you'll be heavily involved. But I was having this conversation with my father, who my dad is, and I know he listens to my show every week. He's a diehard Republican. He very much, you know, through and through is always very conservative and, you know, diehard Republican. And he said to me, you know, Fernando, I wanna buy the biggest bucket of popcorn this June when we see the very first debates among the Democrats that are running for president to challenge President Trump. And I just want to get your thoughts about, let's be honest, this could be a circus in June and moving forward in this primary process because, you know, people I'm sure you talk to statewide and colleagues of yours or people even across the aisle, this, listen, I'm a diehard pro wrestling fan. I love a good circus like anybody. I love a good drama like anybody. But I think this could get bigger ratings than the Super Bowl, Doug, right? Or am I maybe just inflating this a little bit too much?
No, I don't think you are. I mean, look, you have Kamala Harris's own father being hypercritical of her for pandering, you know, to her audiences.
What a surprise.
When she was talking about her background. You know, I think, unfortunately, so many people are worried about, especially in that particular environment, of trying to be something that they're not. You know, be proud of who you are. Be proud of your roots. Be proud of where you came from. Don't pretend to be somebody that you aren't. And I think if you do that, you end up being just fine. You know, like, I'm proud of my roots here in New Jersey. I'm proud of my roots here in Warren County. I'm proud to be affiliated with the party that I am. I'm proud of the people that I work with, and I'm proud of the people that I work for. And I think if people are a little bit more honest with themselves, honest about who they are, honest about what their intentions are and why they're doing things, you know, this country would be a lot better place. The state would be a lot better place. You know, you did mention our Where's Cory Booker thing. I don't know if you caught the other day, but we also came up with these pretty nifty it's raining taxes in Phil Murphy's New Jersey umbrellas. They're pretty cool. I encourage you to check it out at on our state party Twitter page. But after the rain tax that was just passed recently, we went out and invested in some pretty cool NJGOP, it's raining taxes in New Jersey umbrellas. So that when people are walking around the state, they can be reminded that every drop that falls is costing another penny out of their pockets. So, look, we're looking for nifty and creative ways to let people know that we have an active and an aggressive political voice. And as I said earlier, I'm not one to pack up my tent and go home. I am grateful to have a state party that entrusted me with being their chairperson. And, you know, one thing that my parents always taught me was the value of a hard day's work. And I look forward to waking up every day and working hard for the folks that have entrusted me with the position.
Doug, you're the state chair, like anybody else. I'm sure you get inundated with questions. Any desire for higher office? Any desire maybe in 2021 to take a stab and represent the party, maybe in challenging Governor Murphy? Or are we not there yet in terms of where you want to be within the party itself, sir?
Yeah, look, I am singularly focused right now. My goal is to leave this state party in a better position than it was when I got here. And, you know, so my goal is to get up every day and build a stronger Republican organization. And, you know, that's enough for anybody. It's particularly enough for anybody in the state of New Jersey. You know, I want to do this job well. And I think in order to do any job well, you need to be focused on the task at hand. So I am focused on being the best state chairman that I can be. And, you know, as I said before, that's enough for anybody at the moment.
Well, Doug, listen, you've been an absolute gentleman tonight. I feel like I could have you on for 3 hours and we still would not get through everything. But you've been a gentleman this evening. I think you've been a wealth of information. And before I let you go, what I like to do with all my guests is, you know, for almost an hour now, we've had a good conversation. We dissected a lot of issues here that I'm sure Republicans and conservatives and even independents throughout the state tuning in tonight wanted to hear from you. But again, now what I like to do is give the floor to my guest. I've picked your brain a little bit. We've had a good dialogue. I've asked you some questions. But guess what? Now I give you, the guest, the chance and the floor to ask away, or if you want to pick my brain, or if you want to maybe take me to task on something. Sir, the floor is yours. You got anything for me?
Yeah, well, now you're in trouble. This is what I studied for years. I get to cross-examine people every day. So you sure you want to open your life up to me?
There you go.
I'll throw you some easy ones. You ran for the assembly yourself back in 2011, and now you provide a platform for people to go out and express their views, which I think is wonderful. What motivated you to provide a platform so that people come out and talk about who they are and what makes them tick?
Well, one of the things that, again, while working in academia, Doug, you know, before, during grad school, I was doing local media up here in Hudson County where I live, and once I started working full-time in higher education, I took a break from that, and I was approached a couple of years ago here in Hudson County, for example, where, you know, we have some local online news publications, but there wasn't any podcast that really gave a platform or a voice to residents or to candidates. So I started doing that locally on Wednesday nights via my podcast that I do in Hudson County, and then pretty much, you know, the Graham family and the management at Insider, who I had a rapport with, reached out to me and said, listen, we like what you do with your county podcast. You know, you really dissect local politics well. You're an academic. How about coming over and doing it for us with Insider? And I've always enjoyed the content. I have a high amount of respect for the Graham family, for Max Pizarro, the editor-in-chief. I think all the columnists at Insider do great work. And I wanted to be part of the team, and I felt that there isn't a platform like this anywhere in the state, Doug, that allows, I think, elected officials to come on where they can feel comfortable. Again, I've had the most liberal guests in the world from, you know, I've had Anna Lilia Mejia, who used to be the executive director of the New Jersey Working Families Alliance. Now, obviously, this week she's stepped down to become the communications director for the Bernie campaign. I've had Assemblyman Michael Carroll. I've had everybody under the sun ideologically on the show. And I feel that I'm doing a service for New Jersey residents by partnering with Insider NJ, by getting great guests on like yourself to come on and have a discussion. Listen, Doug, we don't talk anymore, I think, as people. I think we live in such a polarizing political climate that we don't really talk anymore. It's about shouting or getting one up on your opponent, or just, you know, name calling or demonizing. That's not conversations, man. And as an academic, you know, what I do in the college classroom is I encourage my students, you got to think, you got to be able to read, you have to be able to formulate arguments that are not just based on emotions, but based on facts. And if you do that, that skill is going to serve you well into adulthood. And I talk to my students all the time, Doug, and I deal with college students, and they're not easy, but I find a way to get through them, and I remind them about that. And I think that's really what this show is about.
I think it's fantastic, and I respect and admire you for providing a place for people to do that, because I agree with you wholeheartedly that unfortunately, you know, it's hard to have civil discourse anymore. It's hard to have a civil disagreement. People immediately, emotions take over, and people immediately become, as you said, polarizing. And it's an unfortunate environment. It takes real discipline, and it takes a real sense of compassion. You got to understand, you know, both sides, and that there's going to be more than one view. And then you got to have a little respect, right? I mean, you got to respect the fact that there's going to be different opinions, and you got to be willing to listen to those, and you got to be willing to respond respectfully and intelligently. So I've enjoyed this tonight. I enjoy having, you know, intellectual, intelligent, respectful colloquies with people. You know, I guess my last question for you would be this, you know, Sure. Because you are in academia, do you find it difficult? Do you find in the world that you're operating in that it's more and more difficult for you to have those types of civil conversations, whether it's because your peers may be more on that radical liberal side, or because, you know, that younger millennial generation may look at the world a little bit differently than you and I do? I don't know how old you are, Fernando, but, you know, I'm 50 years old. I know I certainly see the world a lot differently than my 20 and my 15-year-old do. But do you find it's difficult, or that you have to adjust?
You know what? I'll give you an example, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I was just on Reporters Roundtable a few weeks ago. I don't know if you watch it with regularity. It's a great show on NJTV with Michael Aaron. I don't know if you have a chance
absolutely.
To watch it.
Sure.
You know, yeah, I've been on twice in the last few months, and I'm supposed to come on back again next month. And, you know, I've had Michael Aaron on twice on this show, and he's not an easy guy to get on a show for an hour, much less twice. And Michael's been a gentleman with me. He's come on, and he invited me to Reporters Roundtable. And on the last episode in January, Doug, and you'd appreciate this, we were, you know, on the, you know, it taped on a Friday at the Gateway Center in Newark, right by Newark Penn Station. So it taped on Friday. It airs Saturday afternoon on NJTV and also online. And it happened to be the same day as one of the ongoing hearings during the Katie Brennan, situation. And I brought up something on the air that I really thought was going to get edited out. And I was really happy that it got on the air. And even after I said it, Michael Aaron pulled me aside. And Michael said, you know, Fernando, cheers to you for having the integrity to say what you said. And this is what I said, Doug. We were talking about the Katie Brennan situation and what's going on. And I said, you know, it was right after, it was a couple of days after the governor's State of the State address. And I brought up during the show, and I said, you know what was disappointing to me? That I understand the governor spent like a third of the speech on tax incentives and everything else. Why wasn't there no discussion about any comfort for victims of sexual assault? I said, you know, Michael, last fall, Democrats, both statewide and nationally, were up in arms about, you know, the Brett Kavanaugh hearings and about Dr. Blasey Ford. You know, Governor Murphy went on the record and saying, let's let the FBI investigate this thoroughly. We had Cory Booker. We had other Democrats in New Jersey up in arms having tantrums in front of any camera that would allow them, talking about hashtag believe women, hashtag believe her, hashtag investigate for women. We saw every hashtag under the sun, Doug. And I said, what? You know, it was amazing to me that we saw this outrage. And now, a year later, you can hear a pin drop in New Jersey concerning Katie mm-hmm. Brennan. You could hear a pin drop because, you know, with the hypocrisy of not one Democrat, not one member of the left, not one liberal is going on camera. There's no rallies in Trenton at the State House. There's no protest saying hashtag believe Katie, hashtag believe Katie Brennan. You know, there's you don't hear a peep out of Governor Murphy now, or even Democrats in New Jersey. And I said, and you know what? That fundamentally right there shows the hypocrisy that exists in New Jersey on this case. And what does it say? And what does it, you know, what message are you sending to men and women who are victims of sexual assault? And I just think it's disgraceful. I think the governor missed an opportunity to talk about it. No, I understand, Doug, you're an attorney. I get it. It's under investigation. The attorney general probably has advised the governor not to talk about it, maybe to omit it from every speech he gives. I get all that. But just the hypocrisy that the left and many Dems in New Jersey demonstrated by having tantrums about mobilizing marches against Brett Kavanaugh and that whole fiasco. But when it comes to Katie Brennan, you can hear a pin drop. And I said, it's a disgrace, and it just highlights the hypocrisy in New Jersey. And I really thought, Doug, that and I could hear groans in the studio. I could hear some of the journalists on the panel kind of giving me a look like, oh, here we go. And I could hear groans in the production area. And you know what? To Michael's credit, he pulled me aside and said, you know what, Fernando? You're so right in what you said. Good for you. And the very next day when the episode aired, cut it out. And friends said to me, you know what, Fernando? That took guts to say, because a lot of people who are liberal, especially journalists in this field, Doug, are going to either not talk about it, are going to sweep it under the rug. And I'm not about that. And that's not what the show's about. And that's something that I take a lot of pride in here on this program, Doug. And I'm not going to stay quiet about that stuff, because we have to highlight hypocrisy, and especially in media. You know, we're getting people that pretty much are just announcing that the media is overtly liberal. It's been liberal for more than 50 years anyway. And the fact that people don't see that or don't call it out, I think it's disheartening, Doug. And I don't contribute to it. And that's something that I'm very proud of on this show, that I do not subscribe to any sort of ideology. I'm very middle of the road. I'm not going to lie to you. I do lean center-right. I'm not going to lie about that.
Mm-hmm.
But I also tend – but as an academic, I take pride in looking at issues, again, objectively. Because if you can't be intellectually honest when having discussions, then what the hell are you doing? You know, that's my take
right.
on it, Doug.
Well, look, and I respect you for not letting the system change you. I subscribe to the same philosophy. Look, I'm not going to be defined by the political atmosphere. I'm going to fight to redefine it. You know, I share your sentiment about the double standard that comes out of Trenton. You know, I think who hired Al Alvarez is going to go down in history as one of those questions, like, where's Jimmy Hoffa buried? We're never going to get an answer.
Absolutely.
We live to fight another day. And the one thing that no one can take away from either one of us is a desire to work hard. And, you know, as I said to a lot of Republicans, we might be outraised or outspent by our Democratic counterparts, but, you know, I refuse to be outworked. We've got a fantastic team at State Party. I love working with them every day. They motivate me to do better. And, you know, I am looking forward to the challenges that the future holds. So I am grateful to you for lending me your ear and your airwaves for as long as you have, and look forward to an opportunity where you and I get to talk again.
Listen, Doug, I will certainly do my best. I do want to stop by the Leadership Summit. I'm looking at the program here. And folks, if you haven't had a chance, again, go to njgop.org under the events. Actually, on the homepage, you do see the link for it. Check it out. There's tickets that are available for the Friday and the Saturday, so check it out. I'll do my best, Doug, to try to stop by. I do want to meet you in person and say hi, but I definitely want you back on the show later this spring. Yeah, and definitely I want you back on the show later this spring. There's a lot to talk about. As you know, again, as election season heats up here in New Jersey, and listen, there's never a shortage of things to talk about. So thank you, Doug. You've been a gentleman. My best to you and your family coming up. If I don't talk to you before Easter, which is already coming up in, I think, maybe almost March or early April, we'll definitely keep in touch. And again, thank you for coming on. And please tell everybody you know about supporting Politically Direct with Insider NJ.
You know I will. I appreciate it very much. Hope to get to shake your hand at the summit. If you're listening, don't miss it. It's going to be a fantastic time. Fernando, I look forward to talking to you.
It definitely looks
again.
And worst case scenario, maybe I can smoke a cigar with you and maybe play some blackjack. We can shoot the breeze there maybe, all right?
I look forward to it. I'll talk to you soon.
Take care, Doug. Thank you so much for your time.
Anytime. You take care of yourself.
All right, you too. All right, folks, 9:25 here on the East Coast here on Blog Talk Radio. Listen, great interview tonight. Again, I'm not sure if you had a chance to listen to all of it, but again, kudos to the chair of the New Jersey Republican Party, Doug Steinhardt, on with me tonight, certainly being on with me for a little over an hour, again, commercial-free. I know he's had a long day, and for the chairman to dedicate as much time as he did, I think was great. And certainly, folks, again, if you missed any part of tonight's broadcast, again, I urge you to check out www.insidernj.com/podcasts. You can hear tonight's episode in its entirety. You can do so from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. Certainly, previous episodes are there for you. We got some great guests coming up here in the following weeks on Politically Direct, folks. If you have any topic or issue you want to hear about, and you wish to have me discuss on the air, or any emails you want me to read out loud on the air, please write to the show's inbox, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Again, don't forget to like the show on Facebook. We got brand new likes every day, lots of shares on the content. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram @politicallydirectnj. You can also check me out on Instagram @your_favorite_Fernando. Certainly check me out on Twitter @ProfessorFUribe. Folks, listen, I can't say enough here on the show about how grateful I am to all of you who tune in and certainly sharing my content, whether it's on Twitter, whether it's on Instagram, whether it's on Facebook, just letting people know about the podcast and certainly the faith and the confidence that you have in my abilities every week here as I work very hard to deliver a very good show for you on a weekly basis, every Thursday night live right here on Blog Talk Radio at 8 p.m. And don't forget to check out Insider NJ by going to www.insidernj.com. Folks, it's the best journalism, bar none, any publication online you'll find in the state of New Jersey. So once you go on the website, again, www.insidernj.com, right at the very top, you will see the subscribe button. Click on that, and it'll be conveniently delivered to you free every single morning, right in your inbox, the morning intelligence briefing, courtesy of Insider NJ, the hottest scoops, what's going on in all 21 counties, what's going on at the State House, under the Golden Dome, in the legislature, of course, and much, much more. Folks, you won't get any better journalism in the state of New Jersey than with Insider NJ. www.insidernj.com. Don't forget to like them on Facebook. Follow them on Twitter if you can, and tell all your friends. Don't forget to check out all the news here in the Garden State. Again, don't forget to start your day and even end your day with Insider NJ. Again, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget, whether it's on your morning commute, getting your daily workout in, walking your dog, doing laundry, or homework for my students, both past and present, tune in, take a break here, and you'll be happy that you did. And never forget that it's real, it's here, it is politically direct. Good night, Morristown. To all my friends out there in Motown that tune in here on Blog Talk Radio and also with Insider NJ, thank you so much for the support. I appreciate it. Keep sharing the podcast. I appreciate all of you showing the love out there in Motown, out there in Morris County. Folks, again, please party responsibly this weekend. Please be safe. See you next week, folks, on Blog Talk Radio as I welcome the Executive Director of Garden State Equality, my good friend, Christian Fuscarino, to the show. We got a lot to talk about concerning the LGBT community in New Jersey, advancements that GSC has made, and much, much more. Again, tune in next week, folks, exclusively. I'll welcome back Christian Fuscarino, the Executive Director of Garden State Equality. So I'll see you next week, folks. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.